Hello and welcome to another Connecting Consciousness. If you can hear the bangs and crashes in the background, no, Great Britain isn't up in a martial law or martial attack. It's not a revolution, it's a run-up to firework night. So this is November the 3rd, and hopefully this will go out tomorrow, Sunday the 4th. But because it's the weekend, lots of people like to let the fireworks off. For those people who are not familiar with Guy Fawkes, Guy Fawkes is a celebration of somebody who tried to blow up the lawmaking chamber, the Houses of Parliament, but failed. That was a loud one, wasn't it? Every year, fireworks are sold, and a guy, what we call a guy, is made. That's a person with old clothes, not a real person, and is burnt on top of a fire. Wonderful traditions in Great Britain. So what we're going to do is, as we only had one last week, we'll do not a shortened version, but I'm going to keep it fairly tight. We want to do some updates and then go straight into the questions and try and cover as many of those as we can. So we've had the solar flare. The particles were hitting us today and tomorrow. And thank goodness that those people who got a warning of earthquakes or mass knockouts of our communication systems so far appear to be wrong. I think what I was always saying was that the utility companies in Great Britain over the last 3 or 4 years had been double earthing, connecting up even some of the most rural telephone or power cable poles. And so it would be actually less of an impact in Great Britain. You're more likely to lose your personal computer. So it's always worthwhile to have one of those surge-protected plugs. It's not guaranteed to save you, but is very helpful. So that seems to be something that has gone by, and the Van Allen belt and our natural defences seem to have reduced that. A very quick talk about the midterm elections. They are really close now. This is in relation to sealed indictments. Been told that there's something in the region of nearly 60,000 indictments, and I'm absolutely convinced there are, because I've been shown evidence that there are 60,000, and I'd like to be able to put that out on the website at some point in the very near future, so that people can at least understand that this isn't just whispers in a corridor. There really are nearly 60,000 indictments. There must be an army of people in Washington producing these. It's obviously not just in Washington, it's all over the states, but someone's coordinating them in the White House, and that's a phenomenal number. And that's something I want to return to as we progress through November. I think it takes on greater and greater importance. Certainly it's a great focus for the mind, for both sides that are battling for the humanity on this planet. So we'll come back to that. I guess I just have to say something about the situation with Kevin Moore and Kerry Cassidy and the Mark Richards situation. I've done my best to lay out what my position is. I thought initially I'd been quite clear, but obviously I hadn't. So I've done on my site in reply to a post, I've really tried to be clear that I have no interest in the subject at the moment. There are so many other things which are far more important, and this isn't a disrespect to either investigators, but to me it's a matter that they can get on with and argue with each other. And I really do have other things to involve myself in. Specifically, I want to work out on the indictments. There are certain other things that are coming up probably in December, which we haven't talked about yet. But obviously in relation to the situation that I've said of, it's up to them. My information was very peripheral, and I do believe that I was drawn into it, and I don't really want to be in that. So that's my position. I've made it crystal clear. So that's where we are with that. So I want to try and get on with these questions now. I'm going to try and get through them. So thank you, Becky. If you're ready, let's go with them.
Okay. Our first question is from Alfredo, who says, do you know the book Voices from the Cosmos? The hooded reptilians from that book are very different from the type you contact with. How many types or races of reptilians are in our galaxy? Probably thousands. Thank you for your work.
Well, thank you, Alfreda. Yes, I mean, there are many different groups, partly familiar with the work. I think I have read it, or read part of it some years ago. This is the one thing about this topic, that we can only, or we should only, talk about what we have experience of. It's very easy just to blanket, you know, the reptilians or the greys. I don't believe there are thousands. No, I would say that there were 25 groups, and some of those groups were so marginal that you could probably just call them two or three groups as to one. But there aren't thousands of groups of reptilians. There aren't hundreds of groups. I would put them in the mid-20s. Unlike the greys, there are quite a huge range of those, or other humanoid type species. But no, certainly quite few. This is what it must have sounded like in the Battle of Britain, Becky, don't you think?
Fireworks are really bad. They're really close. Well, the animals are doing okay.
And they are doing fine. I mean, what I would say is there's supposed to be a bit of a recession on. Well, maybe that's what people do. Maybe you know, you haven't got enough money to buy anything really big, so hey, you can afford to splash out on fireworks, and you know, that's how you excite yourself. And I do love fireworks, I have to say, but the amount that we're hearing sounds like a firework factory is on fire. So it's quite exciting, this end.
Yeah.
Next question, please. Thank you.
Okay, the next question is by Mark, who says, "Hello, Simon. I'm wondering if you can shed any light on the following. One evening, I was at my laptop in front of me. With my laptop in front of me on a coffee table. From the corner of my eye, I suddenly noticed something wobble and sway from left to right in the chair near the window. So I took a look, and to my surprise saw a dullish, semi-transparent outline of a human being, male, sat in that chair.
Okay.
The being eventually stood up, 6 to 7 feet in height, seemed muscular, turned to its right, and then walked towards and through a wall. I never saw it again. Thanks for reading this, Simon."
Right, that's detail in that is very helpful. Because we could, before we got the height in there, we could have, obviously we're going to go down the reptilian road, but we could have had black ops, we could have had a human operator. But if we're talking between 6 and 7 feet, it's highly unlikely to have been a human. Not impossible, of course, but highly unlikely. Also, the muscular build gives us a good clue. I wonder if it was a swivel chair, and the chair swiveled, and the person or thing got off. We're okay. What can we extrapolate from that? What we can say is that you were meant to see it. It was deliberately wanting you to see it. It may have been observing you many times before, but you hadn't spotted it. The question is, why is it there? And why would it want you to spot it? So you'd have to then work out what sort of job you do, what job your parents did, what you've been doing that day or that evening, what non-work interests or hobbies do you have. All of these things have to be looked at to see if there's a pattern that comes through from that. So I can be fairly clear from what you've said that that's a reptilian. It's just out of phase. It's come through enough to make an impression on the chair, an impression to absorb light through it, but clearly wasn't designed to frighten you, wasn't designed to attack you. The only thing we would want to know is whether this was all of what you saw, or whether this was a part of what you saw. In other words, did something happen, and all you're remembering is it moving in the chair and going? Because what we're asking ourselves to accept here is that something made the effort to come and visit you, just to be in the chair, to see you and then go. Whilst these creatures don't use money, and they do use energy and time, and it's quite a big ask to expect something to come through a portal. These creatures have, you know, interdimensional, extra-dimensional technologies. So do all that, to go in a chair, for you to see it, for it to walk out 3 or 4 seconds later. What is the point of that? Now, it doesn't mean that's not the case, but what I would do if I was working with a client is double check now to see whether this is only a part of what's happening. I accept you, I believe what you've told me, the information you've given me matches up. Certainly, to me, that is a reptilian type of being that's made itself deliberately known to you. So thank you for writing in, that's really helpful. I'm glad to share that.
How do we know that it's not a ghost?
Because in this case it's dark, it's 6 to 7 feet tall. It's most people report traditional ghosts as translucent, see through them. The difference here is that I believe that this is reptilian because it was described as muscular and between 6 and 7 feet. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Barbara says, "Hi Simon, I've taken this opportunity to say I have listened to you for many, many years because my heart tells me you are genuine and work tirelessly helping humanity. I send you love and sincerely thank you for being you, Barbara."
Oh, thank you, Barbara.
Yeah, no question.
No question, but that's really nice. So thanks ever so much. Appreciate that.
Okay, thanks. Go to the next one. Nancy says, "Oh, no question, just to thank you for your time and work and wishing you all the best."
Well, again, thank you, Nancy. And I'll tell you what this proves. There's no doctoring of the questions here. I mean, I don't get the questions beforehand. Becky doesn't share them with me. She just reads them out and I take them, you know, cold. And, you know, there was a time not so long ago when a certain person would, you know, pick out the questions that were liked and throw the others away. And I did say that what we're doing is we're just taking every question and going through it. So of course there will be ones like that. It's just nice, it's a friend saying hello to me, so I'm okay with that. Thank you.
Okay, lovely. The next one doesn't have a name. It just says, "Congrats on your new show. I've been told I'm a portal and many beings come through. Can you explain more on being a portal? Thank you.
Funny,
all our love and support."
That's great. I mean, I seem to remember being asked something like this, but I can't remember if it was on
the
show
as well.
Or something else.
Perhaps someone sent it again.
I wonder. Anyway, objects can be portals. They can be interdimensional portals for demonic entities and others that are not necessarily demonic. There are portals that we would associate with Mount Shasta or Stonehenge or some of these places, and they are much larger portals. There are artificial portals like a Stargate. They do exist. And there are small portal devices that can open up to transport people. It's very unusual for a person to become a portal. It's more likely that the person can channel or receive information, and that could be described as receiving information in like a portal way. But I don't believe a person can be a portal. It's quite it's not normal, but it's probable that what we're looking at here is a number of entities are trying to communicate through you, and if you choose to call yourself a portal, well, that's fine, but it is more likely that you're more of a channel, you're channeling these entities. So that's how I would look at that, because in a true sense of the word, a portal is something like a spaceship can pass through you or can come from you or can go through you, or a person can walk into you physically. That's the true understanding of portal. I think what possibly we're talking about here is certain entities being able to access you, and then you can have conversations or you can write things down. I guess that's what you possibly mean. Thank you. Well, we're back again. We did have to take a break because the fireworks got so horrendous that the animals went mad. So I think that we have a lull. So whilst they all reload their rocket launchers, let's carry on.
Okay, Sue asks, is Nibiru going to hit our planet, and when will the chemtrails stop?
Definitely not going to hit the planet. If we accept that there is alien life, and then we'd have to accept that much of that is super intelligent, and then if we accept that many of this super intelligent life, for right or wrong, has a very strong interest in the planet Earth and human life in particular, then it wouldn't do anything to destroy life. It just wouldn't, because it's invested so much. So that's not going to happen. It might well happen that an object comes fairly close and the gravitational field does affect some oceans and some of the weather patterns. That I would accept that entirely. That has happened in the past. But a head-on crash, or so close that there's a disaster, no, I wouldn't ever accept that. When will the chemtrailing stop? Basically when humanity reaches a point that it throws off the slavery that it's in, or we are so at the brink of disaster that something from outside says, I can't sit back any longer, this is ridiculous. But if that was to occur, that intervention would not be to save the human race. That intervention would be to save the planet Earth. There's a very big distinction here, because as I've tried to make clear on many occasions, that if Big Brother or Big Sister comes in and helps you, it's quite likely that you don't learn. You will just sit back and wait for your Big Brother or Sister to come and help you again. So any intervention is more likely to be about reducing the pollution or reducing any damage to the planet Earth, rather than the evolution of humanity. That has to come, has to be driven from within, and then we can expect some support and help. That's just the way it is. Those of you who think that's not right, it is right, because this would have happened 20 years ago, 50 years ago, 100, 1,000 years ago. It hasn't happened at those points simply because human consciousness hadn't evolved to the level at which we were ready to make a decision. We are nearly there now. For many of us, we are there and we're past it. But for the wider humanity, it's now approaching the point where it has to make a decision. And that decision, if it's the right one, will bring a great deal of support and help. So that's my answer. It's not doom and gloom, but it's certainly a bit of an uphill struggle. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Anna says, Dear Simon, do you believe that a new fifth dimensional Earth timeline exists presently, separate from our current 3D/4D timeline? Or do you believe our current 3D/4D timeline is slowly transforming into a fifth dimensional reality? An event that will take many years.
Right, I'm smiling because that's a really, really insightful question.
That's what I thought when I read it, yeah.
No, I don't go for the second part, because nothing... I've got to be so careful what I say here. I can't say nothing good can come out of the fourth dimension, because that's not right. But nothing that humanity wants in its search for evolution can be born from the fourth dimension. What comes from the fourth dimension is a trial, a strength, a trial of test, and from that is the ascension, if you like, or the evolution. But you cannot create the fifth dimension out of the fourth dimension. What you can do is you can, through the intent of the planet, the intent of Source, and the intent of humanity, you can win the right to evolve. And the intent of humanity is far stronger than even people in our own subject matter fully grasp, maybe. And that we will go from the 3rd to the 5th, passing through the 4th. I'll accept that there is another reality lined up for us. It has to be fifth dimensional. It can't be fourth dimensional. It can't be. Why would we go back into that again through the control system? So there is a door ready. If you go through the door, there is this fifth dimensional earth reality there ready. You can't just say at 1 minute to midnight, right, let's create this fifth dimensional earth reality. This has to be accepted, it has to grow, it has to form connections, there have to be portals and passageways, and there are increasingly larger numbers of people now who are getting glimpses of this other reality. They're sort of seeing through the matrix is a bit of a banal world, but they're seeing through this screen and getting glimpses of something else the other side. I don't believe that's an AI construct. I think they are genuinely spiritual people who are getting some it's quite a long vision, some it's just split seconds, but as we as a human race evolve, so the barrier between us and the right to evolution gets thinner and thinner. Therefore we get more opportunities to have a little look at what we could go for. So that's my take on it. It's an extremely, it's not a Zen question, but it's an extremely intricate question. But I can really be clear and say to you that it's not going to be born from the fourth dimension. Although many people who are spiritually evolved have done time, if I can use that word, have done time in the fourth dimension and come through it and said, okay, I've done that now. I want to go to the fifth. I don't want to go back. You know, the days of the Great Pyramid were fantastic. They were, you know, we take our hat off to it. It's great. But we've done all that. We don't want to go back to that energy. We want to go to a more cleaner, a more lighter, a more positive energy. It doesn't mean that we scrub out the history of the earth. Of course not. But, you know, it's a rung on a ladder, and it was a very important one. The problem with important rungs of ladders is they're quite big and you tend to feel comfortable and sit on them for a very long time, perhaps longer than we should. And, you know, we need to move off these rungs and move up. And that's what we're doing. That's great. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Jessica says, a big heartfelt thank you for making the effort to find a new radio show, oh, Simon. Thank you. Your service to humanity is genuinely needed and greatly appreciated. I had a few Skype sessions with you last year, and we discussed how I'm being abducted in my sleep by the military / big corporations to be used for psychic missions. I believe you said they leave my physical body behind when they abduct me. What kind of technology are they using to accomplish these abductions? And is there anything I can do to stop or prevent any further abductions?
Well, we would have talked about some of the lesser painful methods to try to prevent that. It's actually more difficult to prevent human military intervention than it is alien intervention, actually. Much of the technology that's used was given, not back-engineered, given. From the reptilians, but using the greys as the intermediaries, the go-betweens. Many years ago, a number of treaties or deals or arrangements were made that allowed off-planet entities to take people and ostensibly to return them. Now, those of you who research the subject know that they reneged on those deals. And in many cases, people were taken and not returned. Or if they were returned, they returned at a much later date. The amount of work or processing that was required, the facilities weren't great enough. And so what they did was that they used, and we are talking many years ago now, we're talking the 50s and the 60s, American military to collect people and then push them on, and then they would be collected the other end. And it allowed the alien group to be at the warehouse rather than out, you know, the distribution network. So they were being fed people, and that's a very unfortunate choice of word, but in this case I'm not talking about eating people, I'm talking about numbers throughput on a conveyor belt going in. The technology that's used removes the energy intent of a person from their physical body. It's not harmful, providing it's not done for too long a period of time. After all, we you know, many of us can do out-of-body experiences or astral traveling. So it's the capturing of that that essence and then taking that and interacting with that. The way to deal with that, if it's a human military, is literally to be aware that in most cases it's helicopter borne, and if it's night time then you must have a flashlight or a torch, and immediately you're aware of that, you need to flash the torch out at the window. That is a sign these guys understand and they should depart. If you are regularly having black helicopters, and black helicopters, remember, are not just helicopters painted black, these are helicopters with no lettering and no numbering. They usually contain a pilot and a psychic. The pilot is just a regular pilot, but the psychic is exactly what the label says. And what we can do is mind battle the psychic. I've had one very interesting occasion where I was at a client's house and the black helicopter actually flew round and round the house while I was there, just to make an impression and just to try and do a bit of mind battling. So there are ways of dealing with it, but it is easier if it's alien than it is military, depending on whether you are being taken by an off-planet group or in-planet group or a human group. That then my answer would depend on that. The important point, I guess, I want to get across is they don't want to kill you. They're not there to kill you or harm you. You're clearly more valuable alive to them. And the sad thing is, I guess maybe about 85 to 90% of all of the human military abductions are for good purposes. Now, I need to explain what I mean by that. It's usually for the good of the country. Psychic women can do things that the most advanced supercomputers cannot. A superluminum computer, quantum thinking at light, can predict the actions of the human race or an individual human and get it about between 85 to 90% accurate within 6 months. After that, it completely tails off. Because humans are so spontaneous and so different, there isn't a human or alien computer that can look beyond 6 months and be anything like accurate. But a psychic female can. So psychic women are of particular interest to the military, because they can target individuals, they can look into the future, they can look into the past. Children are very good at this as well, but it's usually generally women that are used, especially women who've been in Atlantis and have that Atlantean divine feminine connection. Whereas an alien group, they're operating a completely different agenda. They're not interested in that. They're interested in working with that individual for their own purposes, whether that be good, indifferent, or bad. So, yeah, it's a really massive topic. Thank you for bringing that up.
Okay, thank you. Dale says, so glad you're back on the air. Are musical instruments tuned to 332 or 228 hertz or some other frequency better for humans than 440 hertz? A, that means the A. That
right, well, you're more musical than I am. So if I answer this, Becky, then you can tell us what you know, because I know that you are quite a musical person. Any musical instrument made within the last 50 years probably is tuned to the standard, the industry standard. Now, when we look back at, say, let's just choose a composer, Bach or Vivaldi, we're looking at a couple of hundred years ago, maybe. So, if we are playing a musical instrument that's tuned to the standard today, either the music that was written has to be rewritten slightly to equal that, or the instruments are playing that music slightly inaccurately and not as it was originally intended or as it was sounded at the time. If we go back even further to the medieval times, it's very interesting if you look at so these groups that reenact medieval. I'm going to give a plug to Misericordia or to the York Waits. Now, they play replica musical instruments. Now, are those replicas tuned to the original tune? Do we know what the note was back then? But are they tuned to that, or are they tuned to modern? So when they're played, are we actually hearing what someone would have played 500 or 600 years ago? I don't know. What I can tell you is that it was under the Nazi regime, it was Dr. Joseph Goebbels. He was the Minister of Propaganda, and he was all into the occult, all of these guys. And he was in charge of newsreels. We don't get it today because we don't go to the cinema to get news. But you have to remember that back in the 1930s, that's where you went to get your news apart from your radio. If you wanted to get visual with your audio, that's where you went. And so he realized that it was a fantastic propaganda machine, and he actually set about through an international tribunal. Germany wasn't at war by this time. It was still the early, late 30s, maybe 36, 37. And he got the note changed because he had done his research and he knew that a certain frequency, when played with a sort of stirring, marching music, with a very nationalistic film, hooked into the human psyche in a way that the more peace-loving, organic, earth-centered notes were not. Now, what's really exciting, from a researching point of view, is that the Americans went and copied that. Now, why would the Americans copy that? We're 2 to 3 years away, perhaps, from a world war. Nazi Germany was very different from many other countries, and yet the United States of America followed suit and took the lead, and many other countries, and then they just changed. So that does talk about one world government. It does talk about one group. So that's my answer from my perspective, but I would ask Becky to tell us because she's quite an accomplished musician.
Thank you. Well, I haven't played for a while, but yeah, so Bach and Vivaldi were both about 350 years ago. So the old frequency of A used to be 432 hertz, but now it's been changed to 440 due to Goebbels. And all orchestras are either tuned now to 440 hertz or 442, which is even sharper. The real difference in a note is about a quarter of a tone, so it's not even a semitone, but it just feels it's sharper and it's faster and it's higher, and the resonance is just slightly out of phase with our natural earth energies.
What I would like to do for the next I don't know if this is possible, but for the next one, would you, because I know that you're very musical, would you be able to give us you have a flute, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you be able to play us something? Now, would you, in your flute, what is that tuned to? Is it the modern 440?
It depends, again, how I tune my flute. My flute can play both because I can literally just pull the head out or tune it to a certain angle.
Would you...
So I can give a demonstration of the difference.
I'd love that.
But people can look up...
I'm sure they can.
Listeners can look up music. So old-fashioned music used to be played where the A was tuned to 432 hertz.
Okay.
That is in connection to where middle C is, I think, something like 256 hertz.
Sorry to interrupt you.
And that's the point, tuned to the earth.
The point is that you clearly know what you're talking about, and I said that you did because you know, great musician. So I think it'd be really helpful for all of us, including myself, if the next one you would be able to give us a set piece of music, not very long, in the modern setting, and then do what you need to do to your musical instrument, then do the same piece of music, because at least then people know that is exactly what's happened. It hasn't come from YouTube, it hasn't been doctored or changed, and we always wonder, you know, when we hear things. Would you be prepared to do that, Becky?
Well, I would, but I don't have tuning forks that tune.
I'll sort that out for the next one.
Okay, if we can find, just tune it to a note on the computer. Something.
I can get hold of an electronic tuning fork.
Okay.
Which would do that, and I think that would be very helpful. Or maybe one of our many wonderful musical listeners might be able to help us out with that. I know there are a number of people I've spoken to over the years who write music. And are aware and familiar with it, and they might be able to write in and give us a help. But I would like a demonstration of that, because for me what's important is that how can one government that ended up being the government that it was change the world to go down a route purely because they wanted to brainwash people, they wanted to hook in their stories. And I guess what was happening was that let's take the United States of America, I'm just extrapolating now, if they knew the Germans were going to do that, and they were then going to put out a counter video, and their video was backed up by music that was more earth and more source and more loving, I can see how a more negative person would say, hey, we need to be in the arms race here, we need to go up to the same frequency because we need to, you know, match them. And I bet you that's what that was all about. Okay, that's been really helpful, so please let's have the next question.
Okay, so Sepho says, Dear Simon, my question is this. When channelers communicate with the soul of a loved one that has passed away, how does this occur if the soul has already reincarnated into a new body on Earth? Love from So Sepho.
If a person is living on this Earth, and is still able to connect with someone else, that's telepathy. That's not channeling. If you are an incarnate body, if you are a solid body, and you are able to send a message to someone else, that is telepathy. If you are not carnate on the body, if you are an energy body, then we don't call that telepathy, we call that more of a channeling. It's an entity channeling. Yes, it happens. Absolutely it does. So it's either telepathic communication or it's a channeling information. We tend to look at channeling as information coming from something that's geographically a very long distance away. So that's the defining moment there. Also, through channeling there tends to be a historical connection with telepathy. That doesn't have to be the historical connection. It can be that you have the frequency of that individual, like you can dial up their number, and then once you've got that, you can then communicate with them. So it's quite a straightforward answer, and both are quite common, actually.
Okay, thank you. Shadow says, Hi Simon, I found a YouTube channel of a guy who perfectly predicted the Bitcoin value before 2018, and he said that when it drops down to 10 grand, then we should all start withdrawing what we have left, because it will continue to drop to naught with possible small peaks until the year 2020, when every cryptocurrency will cease to exist, mainly because of hackers. Could this be true?
First of all, I fully accept that somebody would be in a position to predict how a currency would go. Such people usually end up working for great corporations or the military. However, there's possibly a much more mundane reason for that. When Bitcoin and other things like that were set up, they weren't set up on the back of a matchbox or for a cigarette packet. They usually had some form of very, very insider dealing in terms of advancement of information. And just as stock markets are built and crashed, so that you could look at a cryptocurrency and say, right, this is the plan for it. We're going to run it to this level. That may take 6 months, 9 months, a year, but at this level, we will then crash it. Now, remember that the National Security Agency has a very big hand in Bitcoin, because the National Security Agency has the most advanced Earth-based computers. And Bitcoin, like many other cryptos, require this coding, this continually ever-increasing long coding, although some of the new systems don't. But so I can accept that if someone had that privy information, they would know that at a certain point, it's like the stock market, you know, they knew at a certain point it was going to crash. Look at 9/11. Look at the stocks and shares of the airlines. There were individuals who pulled their shares out 24 hours before the Twin Towers because they knew that the stock of those airlines would just go down through the ground. Now that's one point. Cryptocurrencies are no different from an arms race. We've been talking about that. You know, you build something, someone tries to hack it, then you secure it, and then they try and hack it, and it goes on and on. I don't believe that a cryptocurrency would collapse because someone would hack it. I think it's much more likely that a cryptocurrency would collapse because it wasn't controllable by the state in the way that they thought it would be. That's much more likely. The other likelihood is that we by 2020 we're beginning to want to do away with money or the concept of money in the harshest point. Therefore, small private organizations running these cryptocurrencies might be done away with, and we'll be left with the multinationals or the large organizations. Some of the most richest men on the planet at the moment have been pulling out of certain products and buying not Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies, not the coin, not the value, but the platform that runs it. So I don't believe that cryptos will be dead by 2020, but I do believe that there will be so much legislation and control that it will no longer be the golden egg that people saw it. Already the laws have been tightened and changed. That's why we don't read about it so much. It's not on everyone's lips. It's just become another controlled system. I'm looking for the time when we don't need money on this planet. I really am. So yeah, that's my answer to that. I'm sorry it's not as gung-ho and as exciting as you might like, but you know, I don't really feel good about artificially intelligent money. Dumb money is bad enough, but giving it an intelligence, you know, that's just about it for me, really. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Sebastian says, "Hi Simon, I wanted to ask you about a being I met in a dream. It was an ET whose spaceship had been shot down. So I tried to see if he was alive, but he grabbed me by the collar and hypnotized me with his eyes. When that happened, my heart started hurting and I saw flashes of colourful lights. When I woke up, my heart still ached and still had the colourful lights in my line of vision."
Right, well, anyone that does that to you isn't a good chap, are they? That's not very, you know, pleasant. This could all be a construct. This could be a trap. Often when we see coloured lights, blues in particular, like a stained glass window, a leaded window in a church, when the light falls right, you get all these shardy shapes, the pointed shapes, right? And they're blues and greens, and they can be quite beautiful. That actually is mind control panning. It's usually either human or non-human. The vision of the spacecraft could be a complete con. It's a physical trick to get you to go and help. So the spacecraft crashes, you go over to help because humans are generally good people. You go over to help, and then he grabs you, hypnotizes you, captures you, and then you're programmed with the colored lights. I believe that is the case. Now the question is whether that is human military, you know, secret society, or whether that is definitely off planet. Remember that the secret human group like to use as a cover an alien connection. Many abductions that appear to be alien are not. They are military. but obviously there are quite a few which really are alien. So I'm leaning towards a bit of subterfuge there, a bit of trickery going on. And then again, if you were my client, I would be asking about what job your parents did, what job you've done, looking at your background, your history, trying to understand why they're targeting you. There's always a reason. If you dig enough, you can find why the military are interested in you or why off-planet aliens have got that interest in you. Thank you. It's a good question.
Okay, thank you. Mika says, Dear Simon, I understand that there are levels of evolvement also in ET groups, as there are here with Earthlings. Do or did you have contact with Arcturian beings, and on what level and what specific qualities they offer in cooperation with humans? Thanks, Mika.
I'm going to tell you a joke. I tell this to my clients, but I think if I share it with everyone, then probably I can't make the joke anymore. So I'll answer the question first of all, that no, I haven't. Not Arcturians. I haven't met them. I know of them, but I haven't met them. In Great Britain, we have the saying, a bull in a china shop. And there's one country that has something like an elephant in a china shop, or an elephant something. But we'll go with a bull in a china shop. Fifth dimensional people are really good meaning. They're really good intentioned. And they want to get things done, and they want to go from A to Z as quickly as possible, and get it all done. And it's not to hell with the consequences, but it's like, got to do it, got to do it. So your Andromedan charges into the crockery shop, the plates and the cups, and in his desperation to get up to the back of the shop, he smashes everything on his way through. He doesn't mean to do it, he's just so fixated on it. So out he goes, crashed through. Then the next level up in the fifth dimension is the Palladians, the Palladian group. So he's exactly the same, very keen, wants to help, wants to do things, charges into the shop, smashes all the crockery, crash, 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 gets to the end of the shop, turns around, comes back, gets a broom, sweeps it all up, puts it all nicely, and then charges out of the shop. The Arcturian looks at it and says, I think I'll just walk around the outside of the shop and go to the back door. So if we look at the fifth dimension, the bottom of the fifth dimension is for Andromeda, the middle part is the Pleiades, and the top of the fifth dimension was Arcturus. But in human terms, very recently it's evolved up into the sixth dimension. Now, I have no connection with direct communication with Arcturians. Was there a secondary question to that, Becky? Was it, or was it by saying I haven't connected with them that ends the question?
Let me just check.
Thank you.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Because I've moved on.
Probably moved on. Yeah, ready for the next one. Was it
on
a question
what
about
what level and what specific qualities they offer in cooperation
I knew
with
there
humans?
Would be. Right. Arcturians are more withdrawn than, that's what I was trying to given my joke, that Andromedans and Palladians are in your face, they're very well meaning, they're vivacious, and Arcturian is, well, I'll just stand at the back of the room and I'll just observe everybody. More thoughtful, more thinking. They are less likely to intervene in human politics, more likely to stay aloof, and to be more wary of humanity, whereas Andromedans and Palladians are much more likely to want to get in here and help and do good things, and believe everyone's great and everyone's going to be great, and then when things go wrong they're deeply upset and hurt because they've trusted people, whereas Arcturians are, well, I told you so. So Arcturians being a higher up have seen more. They've been there, they've done that, they've worn the t-shirt. And we are on the verge in the next few years of going into the fifth dimension and joining our brothers and sisters in the fifth dimension, and also being bulls in china shops. You see, if you've lived as we've lived as a human race in a third dimensional world controlled by rather negative fourth dimensional energy, and then somehow you break free of that, that's what you are. You rush around. I want to make up for everything. I want to do good. I've been so stopped and held back and controlled and treated as a slave. Now I've got this freedom. I want to go out there and do as much good as I can. Hence the bull in the china shop. So you see, it wasn't a rude analogy. It's a very positive analogy. It's just that we've got this horrible fourth dimensional lock on the door at the moment. Thank you. I'll do one more question, I think, Becky, and then we've probably done the hour.
Okay, the last question is by Vlad, who says, "Greetings, Simon. I was wondering if you could elaborate on the experiences in which your soul was in a mantid body. What were your feelings, thoughts, bodily sensations like?"
Nobody's ever asked me that before. Isn't that amazing? All these years, no one's ever asked me that. It's sort of a joke that I could do a radio show on it. I don't think people would want to listen after the first 20 minutes because it would just be boring for them. The hard part for me now is, because I've said this is the last question, the hard part for me is to try to not speak for ages on this. Right, the first thing I remember is the face being completely different. Actually being aware that, I call it a nose, it's not a nose really, but aware that the front of there's a protuberance is out here, and it's just like absolutely, it's like wearing a mask. In fact, I thought I got a mask on, but it wasn't. It's like the body's completely different. Wasn't a problem with clothes or anything like that. Walking's very different. A mantid or a mantis will walk in a sort of a, I don't think there's any animal on earth that will walk like it, but instead of the way that the humans walk, fairly, you know, a sort of normal gait, this is more of a boom. It's more like that. And the other thing is that if you're wearing a robe, it has to be just high enough so that your feet don't get caught under the thing and you fall over. This is a joke, but it's true. So your feet, either the robe has to be so much forward that when you're walking with inside a tent so you can't trip, or it's high enough for your feet. Now, I always remember the feet showing from underneath it, always. So that would imply that there was about that much gap. So the gait was different, the walk is different. Not a problem with the hands, but here's the problem. Not a problem, but here's the first thing, that the eye of these beings is enormous. It takes the whole side of the head here, and it's convex, and its peripheral vision is really fantastic. So you don't have to move your head much because you can get a good swing round. But also because the brain is different, it's almost not X-ray vision, but when you look at another creature, you can actually feel and see the soul. Now, I guess that's what I do when I do my soul readings. I hadn't thought about that. You know, that this is why these questions are so fantastic. That's exactly what I'm doing. I do soul readings. But in the body of a mantid, I remember that if you looked at another being, you could almost see through them. And you could tell whether they were good, evil, whether they were wanting to do something bad, or their intentions. You know, nothing was hidden. It was really quite, you know, you couldn't be deceptive because you were found out straight away. So that I remember, walking along and them all sitting at a table, and as I went past each one, I didn't even have to look at them because of the periphery of the eye. So that's that. The hands are different, so when you hold, they don't eat food. Everything is taken as fluids. But because the hands are so much larger and the fingers are so much larger, that a cup or a drinking vessel had to be much bigger to get your hand around it. And often these things had like metal straws, because it didn't have a mouth like ours. It was much more of a mouth like that, so you could put the straw in and you would suck fluid. So they don't eat meat. I didn't ever see anything eat solids, and I only, when I in that body, I only had fluid. The that's what sticks with me, but what has more impression with me is the technology being able to use these advanced machines, because in that body, out of the third dimension, remember I wasn't in the third dimension, I was in the fourth dimension, an example of where there was a facility and a group of people had been shown a film, and the film was of the earth being destroyed. I wasn't leading that group, but there was a group there, and they were being told that, you know, got to get involved in the equivalent of ecology, you've got to fight for the preservation of your earth. There are people that want to pollute it and destroy it, and although the earth will not explode, they were told, you might as well blow up your earth, because unless, you know, you look after the planet that you're on and you're the dominant species on there, this is what you might as well do to it. So there were indoctrination videos going on, you know, trying to reinforce in people that they had a responsibility to the planet. It isn't just about we'll have one less runway or we'll just recycle our plastic. It was really about standing up and fighting for something that is so unique and so beautiful that aliens from zillions of miles away come to this planet just to behold its beauty. And it's funny that those of us born on this planet, we look at it and we accept it, but these creatures that come all this way will just be in awe of this planet. It's just a beautiful place. But the technologies, and I remember one female having a broken leg and then being set in a machine and the doctor doing the repair work had a see-through screen that was not attached to anything. So it's like science fiction, but it wasn't. It just raised his hand up like that and the screen appeared at eye height. And then, as I have fingers, and it was just pressing nothing, but there were marks. There wasn't perspex or glass. There was no wires. It was just an energy oblong sitting, hovering in the space, and just pressing the buttons like this, and that having an effect on a very physical device down here. And the other thing is that the old adage of the doctor, in today, he or she goes to their patients and has a bag, you know, has a bag, and traditionally it has the bag, and this was a kit, and these machines, these devices just hung in the air. It's just so hard to describe. So if you're operating on a person, you didn't put your hand into a bag, these devices just hung in the air, and you would just put your hand out and you would use that and you put it back and you take that. The concept is just not in any books that I've ever read anyway. And, you know, I wish to God they would make a Hollywood film, because I could actually say to them, you're doing that wrong. This is what you need to put in. You know, that's just nonsensical. That's not how it is. That's how it is. Obviously, that's my take on it, the way it is. So a very, very, very different culture, a very different aspect, a very different outlook on life, but a very, very interesting one to experience. It's a bit like, you know, students that go from one university to another, or they do these exchanges. So this was off this planet, but not exclusively so, because I've got many experiences of being in an underground base where hybrid children were being taught. You know, there was a nursery area where 3 month, 5 month, 6 month, 9 month old babies that were hybridized were being taught, and the just call him the guy in charge of the nursery would drop a rubber ball, and what the children had to do was to control the bounces of the rubber ball with their mind. And I remember one time where this kid didn't, and it just ran after it physically, and there was a great circle painted on the floor. Everything within that circle was sacrosanct. Nobody else was allowed within that. This because of very, very possessive of the children, very possessive. And so it was death to go within the circle unless you had the authority to do so. And then around the outside, I was in a mantid body, and this is underground base, and on the outside are human scientists, men. I didn't see any women. They were men all in white coats. They're very stereotypical, I'm sorry, but they were all in white coats. And they were teaching people to make coffee. Literally, it was a coffee machine. They were teaching people who weren't really human, but looked like they were humans, how to survive and how to make coffee. So there's lots and lots of these experiences and stories that I have, which I think are really, really fascinating, exciting for other people. It's probably just a bridge too far. It's like, well, we can accept the government's corrupt, or, yeah, we can believe 9/11, but when Simon talks about, you know, that side of it, that's a bit too much. But that's what I saw, and that's what happens. And one day, when all the shenanigans come down and all the lies come down, we get all the truth out, then it'll be just great to say, right, let's go forward and let's be a race of humanity that can at least sit around the table with others without wanting to blow them up, stab them, shoot them, or hang them. We just sit down and just talk. And they then, some of these groups have to be in a position where they can let go of the view that they are better than us. Reptilian groups got to let go of the view that they have the right to order us about. And so that balance is what we're seeking. One day we'll get that. So, okay, there's no thank you today because it's only been a week since we last did the other podcast, and I did thank everyone then, and I'll do it in the next one. So the fireworks have stopped. The war's over. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you to Becky, and thank you to everybody. And God bless you all. And I guess there might be some election results in America by the time we do our next one. It'll be very interesting to see whether the Republicans can hold the House and the Senate, or whether they lose the House but control the Senate. It's all really important because it has such a bearing on the indictments. So I was asked, I quickly tell, I did do the Ted Marr show, and I said, you know, I'm not going to tell you what to vote, but just vote for the Constitution. And, you know, Americans are shocked that in Great Britain we don't have a Constitution. We don't have any written down rules. And as I said, quite seriously, we make it up. We call it precedent. Ooh, this happened 50 years ago, so we've got to do what that did. And the Americans say, yeah, but don't you have rules and regulations? And you go back to your book, and you, no, we don't do that here. We say, yeah, that happened 350 years ago. Smith versus the Crown. Oh, what happened then? Oh, well, we'll do that. And that's Great Britain for you. Anyway, lovely. Thanks ever so much, and speak to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.